Well, I would like to welcome everyone to the Region 4 quarterly meeting. Again, many of what we've been doing are virtual, either online or phone calls such as this. I really want to thank the departments for being very proactive and trying to make sure that, everything that we are doing and have been doing continues. So I really want to say thank you for that. And I want to do a call out to the commissioner and her team for the provider meetings. This doesn't relate to everyone, but from the very beginning, there have been provider meetings to address ongoing issues and things that come up. And I think that has been very, very helpful. So I wanted to go ahead. Is somebody coming in?
Hey, this is Jasmine.
Okay, hey.
Hi.
And so I just wanted to say thank you for that. And I want to thank the leadership team of Region 4 and the committees you'll be hearing from, some of the work that's been being done. You'll get feedback on that. But I really wanted to thank those folks for what they've been doing for needs assessment and for legislative proposal. We'll see a bit more about that later. So welcome, everyone. Could we go ahead and you may be muted, but unmute as we do roll call. Could you please tell us your first and last name and if you are with an organization or if you are here as a family member or someone with lived experience? And so I'm going to start off. I'm Robin Nobling. I'm with Lonnie Davidson County. I sit as the chair of Region 4, and so I will share that. I'd like our leadership to start first, please.
This is Elliot Pinsley with Pinpoint Consultants, and I am the legislative committee chair for Region 4.
Thank you.
Angie Thompson with the Metro Public Health Department, and I am the vice chair of Region 4.
Thank you, Angie.
Rama Muhammad with Park Center.
Rama, thank you.
And Rusty with United Healthcare.
Thank you, Rusty. Do we have, I believe, Evelyn?
Yeah, Evelyn Jurgen with the Mental Health Co-op.
And serving as our adult committee chair, I believe, or at least co-chair.
Yes.
Do we have
Patrick Starnes, True Care.
Thank you, Patrick. Do we have Sabine Johnson on the call?
Kubra Akal Bryant, United Healthcare Community Plan.
Thank you, Kubra.
Barbara Quinn, Park Center.
Thank you, Barbara.
Carrie Menifee with AmeriGroup.
Much appreciated, Carrie.
Be Wendy Bob with AmeriGroup.
Could you repeat your first name again?
I knew I would get that. Be Wendy Bob with AmeriGroup.
Be Wendy. Thank you very much.
Good morning,
hey,
Robin.
Robin.
It's Renee. It's Renee Bentley from AmeriGroup, and I'll be able to stay on for the first 45 minutes or so. So glad to be here today.
Glad to have you, Renee. Nice to hear your voice.
And hey, Robin, this is Dana from AmeriGroup as well.
Oh, Dana, it's been a while. Thank you.
It has been a while. I hope you're doing well.
Yes, thank you so much. Do we have anyone else? We have Jasmine. Was on.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jasmine. I volunteer with NAMI, particularly with social media, and I also have lived experience.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And hey, Susan Mee, attorney in private practice.
All right. And who do we have from the department today? I know we have Curry and Avis. Could you formally introduce yourself, please?
Sure. This is Kirby Fye with the department.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Avis Easley. I'm with the department.
Hi, this is Kurt Hipple. I'm with the department.
Oh, Welcome. Nice to have you, Kurt.
Thanks, Robin. Thanks for holding these calls. Looking forward to everybody's voices.
All right.
This is Carrie again. Kirby, could you please, first of all, hi, but could you please tell me your name again? I know we call you Kirby, but.
It's Kirby. Kirby Fye, F-Y-E.
Oh, I thought it was listed as something else. Okay.
Nope. Just like the vacuum cleaner.
Sheldon, can you come back in again, please? Do we still have Sheldon Walker? I thought we had Sheldon when we came in. I could be wrong. Okay. All righty. Well, thank you, everyone. Really appreciate you being here. And what I'd like to get started with, hopefully you received, those of you that were at the last meeting or have been on our list, hopefully you received minutes. And I want to give you a minute or two to review the February 5th meeting minutes, and then I'm going to ask for a motion. I think we're hearing about that glitchy we talked about earlier. Could you repeat, please? We are barely making you out. If we can't hear you, what I'd like you to do, and if for some reason you're there and we, yeah. For any, okay. And for the last person that was on, if you will email R. Nobling, R-N-O-B-L-I-N-G, at namidavidson.org, and let us know who you are and where you are from so we can include you in our roll call, please. And so has everyone had a chance to look at the minutes?
This is Elliot Pinsley. My name is spelled with one T, not two, but otherwise I, with that change, make a motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. That motion, Rusty. And Rusty, if you'll note that, please. So we have a motion with the change. Do we have a second?
Second.
And was that Susan?
Yeah.
Okay, Susan, please be sure to give us your name when you're making a motion or a second. Thank you so much. All right. I'm going to ask if anyone is dissenting. And if I don't hear any dissent, I'm going to consider that a unanimous vote. Do we have any dissent or discussion for the minute? Not hearing me, I'm going to take that as a unanimous pass on the minutes. Thank you. And I'm not, this is that if they're not coming in clearly. I'm going to ask them to turn this over to Kirby right now for the department update, please.
Sure. I'm getting a lot of feedback. If you haven't muted your phone, if you could please mute your phone, that would be really wonderful. So as Robin said, my name is Kirby Fye. I'm with the department. I have a few updates to give you all. Some of them do not pertain to Region 4 particularly, but I want you all to just know what's going on throughout the state and to just be informed on what the department is doing. The first update, the February report of the three-year plan, year one, fiscal year 2020, has been completed and shared with regional council leadership. If you are interested in viewing this document, please contact a member of your regional council leadership for this document to view. The department or the Division of Mental Health Services is seeking proposals from department contracted crisis providers to operate a crisis stabilization unit and crisis walk-in center. The successful proposer will serve adults aged 18 or older who are experiencing a behavioral health crisis while physically located in regions 1 or 2. Counties included are Anderson, Campbell, Claiborne, Cox, Granger, Hamblin, Hancock, Hawkins, Jefferson, or Union County. The CSU or walk-in center must be physically located in one of the following counties: Anderson, Campbell, Claiborne, Cox, Granger, Hamblin, Hancock, Hawkins, Jefferson, or Union. I just said that. I don't know why it's listed twice. This continuum is not intended to duplicate services currently provided in these counties. The deadline for the proposals is tomorrow, May 7th, and more information is located on the department website. The department is receiving $10 million federal grant dollars to take behavioral services to the rural Tennesseans who need them the most. The funding will be spread over 5 years and will fund a pair of mobile health clinics to address behavioral health and physical health needs of residents in 10 rural Tennessee counties. The counties served by the mobile health clinics are clustered in Middle Tennessee, Lawrence, Lewis, Marshall, Perry, and Wayne counties, and East Tennessee, Claiborne, Cox, Granger, Hancock, and Jefferson counties. Counties were chosen based on distress status and need for services. The department will be doing this work in partnership with community behavioral health providers, Buffalo Valley, Inc., and Helen Ross McNabb Center. The goals of Project Rural Recovery are to create a model of care in rural Tennessee that unites primary care and behavioral health and to engage and treat Tennesseans who are underserved by current service delivery methods. Once fully implemented, the goal of the program is to serve about 2,000 Tennesseans at about 4,800 clinic visits per year. The department is proud to add 5 new Lifeline peer project coordinators in rural and distressed areas of the state. The new Lifeliners will be based in Cox, Grundy, Lauderdale, McNairy, and Scott counties. Through the Lifeline Peer Project, people with lived experience of addiction and at least 2 years in recovery use their past to help people overcome the disease of addiction. The department is excited to announce the expansion of a successful program to divert people from jail into mental health treatment services. Pathways Behavioral Health, Volunteer Behavioral Health Care System, and Morgan County Government have been recommended for grants through the Pre-Arrest Diversion Infrastructure Capital Grants Program. Grant recommendations were made by the department in consultation with the Department of Finance and Administration and will be administered by the Department of General Services. After approval by the State Building Commission, each of the 3 grantees will receive $500,000 to implement the program they designed for their communities. Designs include, for Pathways Behavioral Health, crisis services including a walk-in center and crisis stabilization unit located in Humboldt to connect clients to treatment and services for Gibson, Crockett, Dyer, Obion, Lake, Weekly, Benton, Carroll, and Haywood counties. Volunteer Hiawassee Mental Health Center, crisis services will be expanded to include a 24/7 walk-in center with observation and respite services located in Cleveland to serve Bradley and surrounding counties. And Morgan County Government, in partnership with Ridgeview Behavioral Health, a facility for co-located community services in Wartburg. Last but not least, the department is seeking proposals from community behavioral health agencies interested in providing school-based behavioral health liaisons in their community. The primary goal of the school-based behavioral health liaison program expansion is to provide recurring funds for up to 59 new school-based behavioral health liaison positions to assist elementary, middle, or high schools in implementing behavioral health services and supports that improve outcomes for students with social emotional disturbance. Proposals are due by June 1st, 2020, and more information is on the website. Rusty, I'll send you this update for your minutes. And all the links that I just discussed will be included in that document.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Yeah. And thank you, Kirby. And I think it's always nice for Rusty so that he doesn't have to gather all that.
Yeah.
yeah. No, thanks so much. At this time, I'd like to move on to our MCO reports. And since they are here in force, I would like to, and very, very much appreciate that, ask America, AmeriGroup to lead us off, please.
This is Carrie Menefee, and I wanted to invite everyone to our next Behavioral Health Advisory Committee. Normally, these meetings are done throughout the state in five different regions, but due to the coronavirus, we are going to do this virtually on June 10th from 12 until 1:30. I have several of your numbers and would love for you to be a part of it. If I don't have your email, you can email me at Carrie, C-A-R-E-Y, dot Menefee, M-E, N as in Nancy, E, F as in Frank, E-E, at AmeriGroup.com. We'd love to have as much participation as we could. Thank you.
Carrie, if you will email that to me, I'll make sure Rusty gets that information. And when we go to put the minutes out, we'll include that in the minutes.
That would be
so that people will have that. Do you have a particular topic this time, or is it just general?
We're going to be talking about what Tennessee Voices for Children is doing across the state, and we're going to be talking about Recovery Health Navigators and what they're going to be doing throughout the state.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about some great things that's happening at AmeriGroup as well.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And so we'll definitely note that in a minute so that we can get that out to everybody. And Kubra, I appreciate you being here. And could you please share with us what's going on at UHC?
Hi, everybody. Well, we are plodding along, and there are some changes with telehealth, with our providers. So the best information in the changes regarding telehealth is in PainCare website. Please go to PainCare website to find the latest updates regarding telehealth. Other than that, I do not have any other things to report. I don't know if Rusty has anything to report on. Rusty?
No, I don't either.
Robin, this is Renee from the Mayor Group. Can I go back and add one more thing? I'm sorry. We moved faster than I could get off mute. So
okay.
I just wanted to let this group know that we have been working very closely with PennCare and the Department of Mental Health, as well as TAMHO during this time of pandemic, just to come together to identify any potential barriers that's occurring with any of our services, that's impeding any type of care or anything for our members. And so we've been meeting multiple times a week and updating in between that time. And I just wanted to share that there is a website, Robin, I will just email this to you, that PennCare has developed, and it has a lot of really good information and resources around some of the service changes as far as what's allowed for telehealth and things of that nature, all of the memos that have went out to our PennCare providers, and it also includes a link to each of the three MCOs' individual pages so that it is all in one place and readily available to folks. And then also the Tennessee Department of Mental Health has a dedicated website as well. So I will send you both of those links to include in the minutes, but just wanted to mention that and put that information out there, because we know that during this time we've needed to make a lot of changes, and those are still in place. So just want to make sure that everybody has that information.
Very much appreciate that, Renee. Thank you very much. We will make sure that gets out to people.
Sure thing. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate that. Do we have anybody here from Blue Care? I'm not sure that I heard that anybody was on from Blue Care. Okay, I think we gave sufficient time to unmute. If for some reason we did not, please, jump in here in just a little bit. At this time, I would like to go to Elliot Tinsley as our Legislative Policy Committee lead. And Elliot, if you will first start with, very, very brief, with the legislature, what we know with the legislature as far as, status, because I think that all went by pretty quickly. So if you could share that and then share what the committee has been doing for legislative proposals.
Certainly, Robin. Thank you. And good to talk to many of you who I know and those of you who I don't. I hope everybody is well. So this is certainly an unusual set of months here, not just for pandemic, but, just about for everything, and especially for state government. And the budget was passed. This was a budget passed already in March. It was passed quickly out of necessity so that everybody could return safely home instead of continuing to meet as they normally would in the legislature and General Assembly to consider bills. So most of the bills that were not already moved forward essentially were put on pause. A quick budget was passed and a plan was put in place for the legislature to return to business in June to take up bills and reconsider the budget at that time. Of course, that is up in the air and we are not sure what will happen. So we'll be following that closely as we follow restrictions and how things are lifted and so forth. So that's the very quick view. The other important thing to know is that many of the things we talked about in a previous meeting of this group that we were really excited about in terms of growth and new dollars for the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services budget, a lot of those things were carved back out. They were deleted in the budget that was passed in March. And that was because of course, the nature of the situation and needing to be very, very fiscally conservative. And unfortunately, that meant a whole lot of programs related to behavioral health were deleted or significantly cut back. So these are some of the new things. These are not cuts to existing programs, at least not that I'm aware of, but some of the new and exciting things that we thought were mostly done deals are not anymore. So we will have to see what happens in June and so forth, but we'll be following that closely. Before I continue, any questions? Hearing none, I'm going to continue on to say that, of course, the statewide mental health coalition did work with the legislature and distributed information talking about some of the biggest areas of emphasis for this year. It was not very bill specific, but talking about things such as workforce shortage and as well as inpatient access and some of these major, major priorities most advocates are working on around the state. Again, much was not able to be considered, and this was more just about continuing to be in the ears of folks, and I know that group will be interested. So anybody who's interested in statewide advocacy is welcome to contact me, as well as legislative advocacy or just legislative committee work for Region 4. We certainly need your help, and anybody is welcome. You don't have to have policy expertise or even writing skills to help our group. So if you have any sort of interest or want to learn or have any ideas you want to share, please feel free to reach out to me after this. I will go ahead and now just quickly jump into legislative proposals, barring any questions. And this year, we had a month earlier than usual deadline for legislative proposals. The governor's office, from my understanding, from Kirby's report, was that the governor moved the deadline that normally is in June to May 1st. So that created an obstacle. Normally we would discuss our legislative proposals with this group before we submit them, but we did not have that opportunity, unfortunately, this year. We had a subcommittee of those who were able to participate in a smaller group than we had thought, given COVID and tornadoes and other things at play that have limited people's ability to do more volunteer activities. But I'd like to thank those who did participate, especially Susan Mee, Jasmine, as well as Mackenzie, who's I'm not sure on this call, but that Jasmine is a volunteer for NAMI Davidson, and Mackenzie is an intern for NAMI Davidson, and they both helped tremendously with research and ideas as well. And Susan has been my go-to person here over the last few months to really bounce these ideas off of and help get to where we have a really solid argument for everything we're putting forward. I also would like to thank Robin and Angie and anyone else who has given me ideas or discussed the legislative proposal process, and we really appreciate it. So without further ado, the two proposals that we submitted for statewide consideration are as follows. The first is on workforce shortage, and we all know that there is a major workforce shortage, meaning we don't have enough clinicians to do mental health and addiction treatment in Tennessee, and that's really pervasive throughout most areas. Our thought was, how can we tackle workforce shortage without creating a huge fiscal note, knowing that anything with a large price tag associated with it may not have legs here, especially with all the hits the state is expecting to see related to loss of sales tax revenue and so forth from COVID. So we wanted to tackle this in a unique way. We saw that another state, New Mexico, had tried something different a few years ago involving a survey. And if you don't mind, there's someone who's not muted. I'd like to ask if they could please mute themselves. That would be great. So there is, it's just background noise. Thank you. There on these, this legislation proposal is about creating a survey, though actually not creating a survey, tapping into an existing survey that is done by all behavioral health professionals when they renew their licensure. So at the time of licensure renewal, providers go on to their board of licensure's website, and they will answer questions about whether they've had any issues or gotten into any legal trouble or anything since the last time they applied for licensure renewal or their license. And our suggestion is that we put a few more questions on there that will try to gather some data that will shine a light even brighter on the specific elements of the workforce shortage in Tennessee that we need to focus on. And our hope is that collecting this data will allow for this group, for the statewide council, for the legislature, for the Department of Mental Health, Department of Health, to have access to this extra information that can hopefully be used to create a strategic plan to create some deliberate action from there, considering the path that we're on is a little bit frightening with how we're going with psychiatrists and therapists and all sorts of other mental health and addiction treatment providers who are just not in enough supply to meet anywhere near the demand we have. Of course, we also have an expected increase in demand that is forthcoming due to all of the things that have happened recently. And I think in Region 4 that I just am speculating a bit, but we've had tornadoes. We've had we've of course had pandemic. We now just had, I forgot the names of them, some weather terms I had never heard of before, and walls of debris and winds and power outages that many of you still may be experiencing. So, you know, there's a lot going on, and we need to be prepared and expecting more people to be thinking about mental health and accessing or wanting to access services. So our hope is that this will be agreeable and that there can be an effort collaboratively between the Department of Mental Health, the Department of Health, all of the respective licensure boards for those applicable professions that do any kind of behavioral health clinical work to ask a standardized or implement a standardized plan across these boards and provide the data for further analysis. Any questions about that proposal? Hearing none, I'll move on to the next one. This is our second of two proposals, and this one is a little bit different. For those of you who were here last year around this time, I mentioned this as an idea. This is about reducing stigma through changing the name of the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services. And so just to quickly tell you what that looks like, it's changing one word. It's deleting the letters A and B in the word abuse and changing that to use. That is all related to the fact that stigma is related to the phrase substance abuse or substance abuser. And thanks to Jasmine and others on this call, we did a lot of research on this topic. We did a really thorough literature review, and we're really able to find really good concrete evidence that shows how that phrase, substance abuse and substance abuser, and similar language directly adds to stigma. And research actually shows that using that terminology creates labels in a way that leads to individuals who are in need not accessing services as often, leading to lower quality of care and not as great of treatment outcomes. All of those things warranted in our committee's mind of a suggested change for the department's name, one that can be done over time in a way that keeps costs absolutely to the minimum so that we're not suggesting everything be overhauled at once. Just as things and materials run out, we're reprint with a new name and change it where it falls in on the Tennessee code. So there is a whole lot of detail, and we will share these proposals hopefully after this meeting, Robin, with all of you. Robin has them, and I want to make sure you have a chance to read through them. But there's a lot of good information there. For anyone who may be asking why is this necessary, I hope if you read it, you'll understand a little bit more as to the issue and why this is actually more of a big deal than it may seem beyond just changing two letters.
So
any questions?
Yeah. Anybody have any immediate questions? And so what I would like to encourage, if some of you may be unmuting, and if you are, please feel free to make your comments. But what I would like to encourage is if you we're going to send out the proposals. We would have loved to have sent them out sooner, Treaty, but this got moved up a month on us unexpectedly, and we had to do a grand rush on trying to get this done. And I want to echo the sentiments of Elliot and thanking Susan Nee and Angie Thompson in review, and then Jasmine Zhu and Mackenzie Mellinger for their support and help with this. So thank you very much. We have very often, you'll see in between the meetings, we'll have a request by the department to share information with you. And so we will probably more than likely bundle this with a few of the things that have come out recently. So just keep an eye out for it. And thank you very much, Elliot. At this time, Evelyn, I'd like to ask you if you have anything to share about the adult committee.
Thank you, Robin. We are putting that committee together again. And I just want to thank Elliot for some of the things he said about what has happened in region. Our region for the last few months, we have been hit with a little of everything. And it has people talking and thinking, and truly people have came closer together. People have been calling me about ideas they have, and what I'm asking them to do is join our committee and be a part of the adult committee. And some of the people who are calling me with some fantastic ideas are some licensed providers who seeing their consumers or clients in a different way now. There is a different kind of environment between the clients and the providers. And so the providers are coming up with some great ideas. So I'm inviting them to be a part of the adult committee. So hopefully when we meet again, we will come with some recommendations or suggestions of what people are seeing and how they think we need to move forward.
Thank you, Evelyn. Do you have any time set up at this point? Do you have an idea of when you might want to meet by phone? And I will throw also out to you that if you choose to do a Zoom meeting, Nami Davidson will host that and set that up for you so that you can, we'll facilitate that so that you can be able to do that. And I'm sure there are other ways that we can set up any conference calls for you also.
I will get with you, Robin, on a date and a time, because we were looking at around the middle of May, and if anyone on the call would like to join that, we'll get the information out to you. But I think this is really a time for this adult committee to make a move, because people are really having some different thoughts than they had 2 months ago.
And I would like to say this about any committee work. I know when you hear this, I know we're all busy. We've all got stuff going. Some of you have some great ideas. We want you to give time to the extent that you can. And so that means that if you can come in and help with an initial idea, yes, you may be called on to do a little bit more, but I don't want you to be afraid to get involved with the committee and to share an idea that might be really, really helpful to somebody. So do please reach out to Evelyn and anybody else if you don't know how to reach somebody. If you don't know how to reach somebody, get in touch with one of those of us in the leadership, and we'll make sure you get connected. So thank you very much, Evelyn. Anybody?
Robin, this is Angie. I have a question. Maybe this is more of a question for the department. If we are holding committee meetings, do they have to be considered public meetings? And are there any guidelines around holding those kinds of committee meetings?
Thank you, Angie. Kirby, you want to step in? Kirby or Avis?
Hi, this is Avis. What we're doing in the department, and I can kind of share that answer based on what we're doing, is going by the governor's executive order, which for us is to, provide an opportunity for conference call meetings if the meeting is not available to be held in public together, and that is the case at this time. So in line with what we're doing with the committee meetings now, the council meetings now, we are posting those as WebEx meetings and putting the recording as well on the meetings. Now, I would say this, if as far as the committee meetings held with the subcommittee meetings held within the regional council meetings. Number one, if you want to announce those meetings publicly, then I would say, number one, that you would do that. If you're going to hold those meetings by Zoom or WebEx, you can have the option of recording those meetings. Now, it is not to say that you have to, but for us, with the meetings that we have on the council meetings across the state, we have to abide by that executive order. Does that answer your question?
Well, and if I might, Avis, I think what I've always understood is that the council meetings do meet that rigor, but the subcommittee meetings haven't been they're not held to that standard. Am I correct in thinking that? I mean, that's always been kind of my understanding.
And yes, and in the past, we have not asked for those meetings to be announced on our website or anything as public meetings. But as far as to the public, we have not done that in the past. So I will continue as you are. But what I would suggest that you do for sure is make sure that, number one, you have excellent written communication and minutes and notes regarding that meeting, that you have that saved in a file somewhere electronically that you can access it, as well as when the new leadership changes in a year or so from now, that you pass it along. And the reason why I say that is because with our recent audit, in case the next time they come, which will probably be about 3 years from now, if they need that information, they may ask you that information, because we have shared with them that our regional councils do have subcommittees that mirror the statewide meetings. So I would say continue as you are, but make sure you have excellent documentation of those meetings, including persons who attended those meetings.
All right. Yeah. Thanks. The other thing I'm going to ask our committee, subcommittee chairs, and this is something we generally will do, is if you will let us know when you're holding those meetings, we will put it out to the entire council to give them the opportunity to attend. Okay. So thank you, everyone, for sharing, and thank you for all that you're doing, everyone. At this time, I'd really like to expand on that a little bit. Sheldon, is that you coming back in?
Yeah, I've been in, Robin. I had to get kicked off.
I saw your email pop up that you got kicked off. Could you please announce yourself to everybody who you are and where you're from?
Okay, Sheldon Walker. I'm with the Metro Health Department. I'm the co-chair of the SPAC Coalition, Suicide Prevention, and African American Faith Community Coalition.
Thank you for having me, Robert. Yeah, sorry
you
got bumped off there. So now, at this time, in previous years, we might have had a speaker at this time or a legislative update, but given everything that's going on, I really thought it would be nice to have the opportunity to hear from you for the next about half hour or so or more. Just anything that you would like to share about what you are doing either as an individual or an agency to serve or accommodate people during the COVID crisis. Anything new that you may have developed, how you've, a lot of us have had to be nimble in how we're delivering services. And so I would like to hear what you're doing out there. And there may be things that the rest of us don't know that you are doing to accommodate people. So I'd like to give those of you that want to a brief time to share what it is you're doing, how it may have been differently done now than it was in the past, and any resources that we may not be aware of that are out there for people. So anyone that would like to can to get us started off. We do have someone. I thought that what Renee shared with us was kind of a good example. What else have we got going on out there?
This is Evelyn, and we here at the co-op, I do a lot of work with houses and group homes, and this has been a very trying time for them. Most of their consumers who usually go to day programs, they're now home, and so they've had to come up with activities and things to keep people satisfied in the home. And we've had one home that has had some concerns because they had several people who had temperatures, had showed some signs and symptoms of the virus, and so it made the home very, very nervous. And so we had to do a lot of counseling at home. But I really want to thank the department for coming forth with some supplies that, early on with some masks and some cleaning solutions and some advice and helping that home out and helping them to get through the process. Fortunately, the two people there who had a temperature and some symptoms, both were symptom-free now, and they did not have the virus, but the department stepped right in and worked with us hand-in-hand with that home just to show that, it broadens the perspective of everybody about who you could have to work with, because the particular home had never – they never knew what the Department of Mental Health did, but now they have a clear understanding that they are there for them if something major happens, because it got really hairy for a while. We had to hold their hands like 24 hours a day through this process, and it turned out great. And it was Matt Yance and his group really stepped in and assisted us with that. And I want to thank the department.
Thank you very much, Evelyn. I think that's wonderful. And there was something you had shared with me also about how the group home management and staff were getting to know their clients in a way that they hadn't before, which sounded really wonderful.
Right. Since they're home and they're not going to the day programs, they've developed a different kind of relationship with their clients, and they've gotten to know them. And the group home providers are telling me, so many things they did not know about their consumers or clients that they've learned about them. And they learned, so instead of their weaknesses, they've learned a lot about their strengths. So it's not a good thing that happened, but some good things are coming out of it. Some relationship building and some knowledge of what people are doing and how they can really, really assist their clients in their homes. So it's turned out to be some great relationship building.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Thank you. Anyone else want to share what they're doing now that may be different or how they're continuing services at this time?
Hey, this is Rusty. This isn't something I've been doing, but I did want to share another attaboy for the state. I have a member that, in best of times, has a lot of anxiety issues, and I have directed him to the Mental Health America line in East Tennessee, and with everything going on, they have become overwhelmed. So he actually reached out to the governor and received a response from the governor and the governor's press secretary. And I thought that was really impressive.
That's amazing. Thank you, Rusty. I'm going to go ahead and share what we're doing at NAMI Davidson County. We went ahead and took all our support groups online. They are Zoom, or if you don't have a computer, and we think this is very important because everybody's being referred to websites, and we have to remember there are people out there that don't have computers. And so our support groups are also accessible by phone. We have added an additional support group to what we already had going so that we have one going every week. It's open to anyone in Middle Tennessee. They're on our website. You simply click on our event calendar to do that, or call us at 615-891-4724, and we'll make sure that you get connected. And these are, we have two mixed support groups for people with lived experience and family members, one just for people with lived experience and one just for family members. And we've also taken our caregiver primer, which is held monthly on Saturdays. We have a 90-minute introduction to caregiving for folks that may be coming into this for the first time, people that they love who they may find them in the hospital and not knowing just what to do with this. And so that is everything we're doing is free. And we're also doing a social hour on Mondays. We've moved it to 5 p.m. We're calling it HI, H-I with an exclamation point, T-T-E-A. And it's strictly a social hour because we know that there's a lot of people out there in social isolation. And we know through studies that loneliness is really something that strongly impacts people's mental health. So that is weekly on Mondays at 5 p.m. And again, they can reach out to either our website, namidavidson.org, or our phone number, 615-891-4724. We have maintained our helpline throughout this for information, mental health information and referrals. So our 9-to-5 weekday helpline has been operating throughout this. And if you want to refer anybody to us, please feel free. We have been taking, in fact, I think we've been seeing an increase in referrals. So, we cover pretty much, we go out to Davidson County, but we assist people that come into us from all over Middle Tennessee. So I just wanted to let you guys know about that. If we get anybody else that has anything they'd like to share. Is there any particular difficulties that you've been having, any of you? What have been some of the challenges that you've been facing?
Hey, Robin.
Mm-hmm.
This Sheldon. Really, one of the challenges that I've been facing, particularly, is just I'm a community person, and I like being out, and I like shaking hands, and I like hugging and talking to people, and adjusting to Zoom and WebEx has been challenging for me personally, and with SPAC, our meetings, it's really been challenging. So, you know, just keeping a face that, you know, eventually, as time permits, you know, we can get back to hopefully where things used to be. But that's just been a major challenge personally for me is this. I just like shaking hands. So.
Yeah. Sheldon, thank you so much for sharing that, because what you've just done is lead into our next segment, which is what are you doing for self-care? Because this group, a lot of this group, some of you are individuals that are family members and people with lived experience, but a large portion of the group is also professionals and people in the field. So, Sheldon, what are you doing for yourself for that? What is anybody else doing? You caregivers, almost every one of us, regardless if you're with an agency or you're at home, are caregiving either others or ourselves. What are you doing to help yourself?
One of the things that I'm doing for self-care, I just try to remind myself maybe 3 or 4 months ago when everything was normal, it was 100 things that I had to do that you know, I never had time for. I used to put off and procrastinate. So now, you know, I tell myself that 2020 is a year of preparation. Things that I've always said I wanted to do and never could do, projects that I wanted to start on and I never started on. So I'm just preparing myself, even with the coalition, to get things in place so when things get back to going to normalcy, you know, we can hit the ground running. Another thing I'm doing for self-care is I'm meditating a lot, listening to smooth jazz, you know, sitting by myself in my office, just listening to music, doing yard work, going to Home Depot. So that's really my self-care that I'm doing.
Thank you. I think we have that meditation and jazz thing in common. So, what about others? What do you guys, I know for some of us, this has been a real busy time making all these shifts and staying on top of it and, you know, learning how to Zoom and, you know, things like that. So what have other people been doing for their self-care?
Well, Robin, this is Patrick. It just seemed like that you and Evelyn are both pushing me to speak. I know it's not intentional, but I just got a lot that has been going on lately. I know both of you guys have kind of heard my challenges from the beginning of all the things that's going on, even dating back to the storm and the tornadoes. But I do want to give some praise report and shout-outs definitely to Barbara Quinn, to Evelyn, to Avis, representing the department, also to Centerstone. There has been major relationships built between TruCare and these individuals in agencies along with the department. Because early on, some of the challenges that I did face, and we have definitely overcome many of them, and some of the guys, some of the organizations, such as the day program, immediately wanted teleconferences at some of the houses that I'm a provider of, and it was a major challenge. But now it has been determined that most of the individuals that I'm that's in the supportive living home, they are very computer savvy. They're teaching me some things now. Shout out to Centerstone. They brought an iPad over to the house, and they're doing their day program and teleconferences right there at the house. And the individuals that attend these meetings are logging on themselves. They're on Zoom. They're enjoying their meetings that they're having daily. Barbara has personally called a couple of my houses, checking on her individuals that attend the day program there at a park center. And that's, Barbara, you just don't know to what extent that that has pleased many of their hearts, hearing from you in the level and the role that you, you're involved in at Park Center. And to Avis and the department, there was a house that I had that needed to be licensed when all of these things taking place. I had individuals scattered, sleeping on top of each other, me spending countless of hours making sure that the anxiety was down and from the storm, first of all, and then epidemic right after, spending a lot of time with these individuals. And Avis in the department definitely put me in contact with individuals and agencies and people that can assist the needs that TruCare had, and I'm very, very don't know how to say thank you enough for the department helping me in these efforts and getting the things that we need and the resources and the assistance. And again, shout out to Evelyn, which worked with me hand in hand in getting a house license through all that we've gone through virtually, inspecting. The house was inspected through Metro. House was inspected through the Department of State, and we're well on the way of opening up another facility to house females that are, have been waiting on to be released from the hospitals, from some of the other areas that, of the state that they've been waiting on beds or waiting to get out of confinement. And I just have to shout out again to each one of these individuals that I mentioned in helping True Care get through this process of challenges that we went through first again from the tornado and then this this dreadful epidemic. So, hey, I'm smiling today. I'm happy today. So that's wellness for me. As far as what I'm doing for myself, it's going to come later as a reward, award, which I get daily, going into some of the locations that I have, seeing these, seeing my clients and seeing these individuals smile and welcoming me in just to show me some new techniques on the computer and new things that they have learned, electronically, as we went through this trying time.
Thank you so much, Patrick. And I think that almost echoes kind of what Evelyn was saying, and what we're hearing now and again is, as we're adapting to this, we're finding new ways to be. And in being, we're finding positive things. So, yes, it is hard. Like Sheldon said, it's hard to be isolated, but we're getting creative on how we can do things. So that is just terrific. Thank you. And again, thank you to those that stepped up and supported you. I'm gonna mention Barbara. Barbara, I'm gonna ask: is there? I mean, that was one instance. I'm sure there's many instances. Can you share a little bit more about what you guys have had to do in order to kind of pivot and help people?
Well, for most of the folks, a lot of our services are still, with our housing program. Obviously, that's still going on. For our independent housing, we're doing things, with social distancing. Like I've delivered medicine a couple of times that was mailed to our building site on one on North First, and I call ahead of time, say I'm gonna leave it, I'm gonna knock on the door, and we wave at each other through the door, and then I scurry off before they come out and pick it up. But so we can still do, a lot. We've delivered groceries. Our homeless outreach individuals are still delivering medications and food boxes to the camps. But again, they're wearing their personal protective equipment and just doing as much as they can. Our employment team are still getting people jobs, and it's all being done over the phone and working with them over the phone. Talking to employers over the phone. The challenge has been obviously with our day program, and we're so used to all being together, and it's really hard to. It's just really hard to accept that we're not all together. But they reach out to them through phone calls, and the ones that have computers, they've been able to FaceTime with them, or they've got a phone where they can FaceTime. And then our IOP, they're providing, therapy through groups through Zoom. So, but it's changed everything. But I did want to share some good news before, and I want to thank Patrick for his kind words. Calling the members, I get more out of that than they do. But Park Center has a new CEO that will be starting on May the 26th, and that is Will Conley. And I hope many of you know Will. He worked for Park Center, and I think he came to work for us in 2006 and started our homeless outreach program, which at that time was just the SOAR. And he stayed with us for about 3 years and then worked for a company providing technical assistance, I think, to train people to do SOAR, but then came back and ran the homeless commission here in town. So many of you might know him, and his name is one of the names that I gave to the search committee, and I could not be more thrilled than to see Will coming to Park Center. That's exciting.
That is big news, and we look forward to welcoming Will.
Oh, yeah, it'd be my exit would be have a totally different feeling if it wasn't someone that I just totally embraced and felt like that they had the Park Center spirit and philosophy and the culture. So he'll hit the road running and do. I can't wait to see what he does.
So Barbara, this is news to some of us that you are leaving. When are you officially leaving, or are you leaving?
Well, Well, I'll still be in town, and so I'll just be available as needed. I don't think he'll need me. But Will and I are friends, so I'm sure we'll be seeing each other. And so just as needed, and I'll probably help with some of the events. We get to have events again, you know, anytime soon. So.
Right. Well, thank you, and that is big news. So if there's any other self-care and personal shares as far as how you're taking care of yourself, what are you doing for yourself? Anybody else along those lines?
I read a lot and eat a lot. You know, I might have to stop the eating because, you know, I gave myself permission to eat things I don't normally eat, so I've got to back off that. But I enjoy walking, thank goodness. So that's what I'm doing for self-care, and I'm Zooming with a lot of friends.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Anybody else?
So, this is Elliot.
Sorry.
Yeah, that is Elliot. I was just going to – I know we have some time here, too. But I think something that I've been doing for myself and based on other calls and also anecdotally things that I've been hearing, the importance of rationing the news and being careful about that, especially with those who have children, but also just for your own wellness and well-being. I think the news can be overwhelming. It can be misleading. It can be all sorts of things, and it can also be informative, but rarely is it something that reduces stress, at least lately, that I've been seeing. And I think that's different for everyone, but I would just, you know, some of the things I've done is I try to limit my news reading to a certain period of time at a certain period of day, and then, you know, maybe check in maybe one other time, but that's it. Instead of, I definitely don't leave any news on TV or anything, no chance that my children can overhear and other things. And part of that's also because of the fact I'm hearing from others who children have been hearing either parent discussions or overhearing the news that, you know, things that are scary and children that might be scared to go out their front door now who because of coronavirus in the air, for example, and things like that. And so it's really the protective, you know, parent in me has come out quite a bit here. And so that's been something that's very important. Also balancing, you know, becoming a teacher for my son who's in second grade, but still had plenty of work that's been assigned and not work that's been that easy for him to do independently. So, you know, adapting to that and knowing that there's an end in sight here coming up is helpful. But how do you manage that with all of your business and professional and volunteer expectations has certainly been a challenge. And we've solved a lot of that by trying to just do some fun things after, you know, done with work for the day and playing outside and sitting out front. And we're fortunate to have a little bit of space here. But just yesterday was my youngest son's fifth birthday. And instead of just saying, you know, we can't really have a party, well, all our party was inviting my parents over, and they stayed on one side of the driveway. We stayed on the other, and the kids played in the yard in a little bounce house. And we had Jet's Pizza delivered and they just put it directly on a table. You know, it's just, you know, kind of going about things. Everything seems a little bit more strange, a little bit more strategic maybe. But at the same time, once you get over some of that and initial fears of even my parents to, you know, not sure how to go about this, is this going to be weird? It was really normal. I mean, we get over the fact that, yes, we'd love to hug each other, you know, do those things. But once we do our initial hugs, normally we're not usually sitting right on top of each other. We're usually sitting a few feet apart and talking and eating, and we did just that, and it was great. So I'd encourage anyone who may be missing some of that, who does have close friends or family, I wouldn't extend it much beyond that in town, and has enough space outside to be able to stay apart. It was a really good experience, so I wanted to share that.
That's great. Thank you. Something I wanted to share as far as a good thing that happened, we had our NAMI Davidson walk. We were we joined the national movement. It was our first year as NAMI Walk Greater Nashville, and it was scheduled for April 18th in Shelby Park, and we were thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, what are we going to do with this? And so what we did was we just created an online event. And it was actually quite amazing. We revised our goals from 65,000 to 35,000 and thought, you know, after the tornadoes and COVID, we'll be lucky to get that. And then an amazing thing happened. We took it online. We asked people. We had a cheesy sneaker. We were encouraging people to let the sneaker do the walking. And with the sneaker, we wanted people to share, you know, why it was important to be involved with this event and to make it more of a focus on mental health awareness and not so much on the fundraising. But what came back to us was so amazing. And people came back, and the things that they shared were just terrific. I wanted to thank Mackenzie and Jasmine for keeping the social media going around that, the Instagram. But what happened was we ended up being discovered by Verizon. They took us on as they were looking for digital volunteer activities, and ours became the number one digital volunteer activity in the country. We went viral with Verizon. And the virtual event actually ended last Thursday. And instead of the 35,000 we were hoping we would get near, we're currently at $68,000. And so it's been amazing, and some very poignant things were shared with us. We got back to everybody that shared with us. If you go on our website, we posted on the on our Facebook page. We got a great video that Mackenzie did. And our YouTube page. So if you go to NAMI Davidson YouTube, you'll see this fantastic video that was developed as a result. So we couldn't be more surprised and happier. I mean, it was amazing. And I want to thank the local folks that participated too, because we really appreciate our loyal local folks, local sponsors. It was amazing. Thank you, Barbara. I see your email. And Elliot, with Elliot's comments, I want to just say that it's Children's Mental Health Awareness Week this week. So I think those comments are really appropriate during Children's Mental Health Awareness Week. And if any of you are doing anything particular for that, we'd like to hear from you. It is National Mental Health Awareness Month, and I would like to throw out something that we can do as a group. I will do that online. Didn't have time to do that and get that ready with everything else that's been going on. And today is Giving Tuesday. Some of you may be participating in Giving Tuesday. And tonight starts the big payback with the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee. And I know many organizations are involved in that. So, you know, life is definitely going on. So what I want to do is, are there any other programs? Do you have any fundraisers? Do you have any webinars? Is there anything else that you would like to share with this group and let us know about? Because after that, we're going to go ahead and close the meeting. Like we said, we knew we wouldn't have to meet the whole time. But if there's any, I want to make sure that we haven't missed anything, or I want to give time for announcements, and then, you know, if there's anything you think we may have missed that needs to be brought to the attention of this group, I'd like to do that with announcements and everything right now. So please do share. Okay. Getting nothing but crickets. So I am going to take that to mean that we have done all the sharing. I want you guys to look out for any meeting notices as far as the adult committee goes, any announcements, in the legislative proposals. We're going to get those out to you as soon as Rusty can, and I want to thank him for the good job he's been doing with the minutes. We'll get those out.
Hey, Robin?
Yes.
Hey, sorry. My mute button. Yep, I hate this mute button. Anyway, not really meeting related. Just, did you happen to get my email yesterday about the needs assessments yesterday afternoon?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I did, and it's on my list of you're looking for data.
I just wanted to make sure you got it. Do you think that's something you all might be able to do by Friday afternoon?
By Friday afternoon. Definitely not. You know, first Wednesday of the quarter is always busy for us. And for those that need it, we do have a support group tonight. But, yes, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And so many thanks to all of you for all you're doing. And it's kind of a new world, and that's not always a bad thing. So thank you for your participation. And reach out and touch carefully. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Robin. Bye, all.
Thank you very much,
bye,
everybody.
Bye.